hearing these things. Appreciate the chance to visit with you this morning, but I think this, the title of the session is something like Food Health Programs and the Cost of Mistakes. The title Food Health Program is pretty good, but kind of the cost of mistakes. I'm not sure I've ever seen the program today. You should comment about the speakers right up in front. So anyway, we hope we do well. Also, Dr. Griffin asked me to ask for a show of hands. How many of you are from Texas? Okay, because he's trying to figure out if he's going to tell a census joke or not. Anyway, I'd like to move into the topics this morning related to herd health programs and maybe some discussions of how we might stretch, how much we can get out of herd health programs. I think Dr. Griffin's discussions will also expand on these topics very much. I'm going to focus on three main areas, some population dynamics, immunity resistance stuff, a little bit on vaccines, but then also I'm going to move into some biosecurity, biocontainment topics, especially related to introduction of new animals into herd introductions, and then we're going to talk about DVD control in this context for a little bit as well. So. And I believe as we have planned, there will be questions at the end, so please make notes of those, and we'll get at those as well as we can. There's no question that the industry, our beef industry, is changing every day. And as we consider moving from, we've moved very much from a single animal, individual animal, veterinary medicine to population, so it's no secret to any of you. And so that's the caption at the bottom of that picture is a serious case. Well, yes, I'm sure it was a serious case, but as we consider what we're dealing with today, we're certainly dealing with many different parameters related to the health that expand very much beyond that one animal. And as we consider herd health programs and what we can gain from herd health programs, I guess the cost of mistakes or the cost of gains, preferably, we certainly need to begin with the parameters that are most important to us in our beef enterprises. Certainly, I'm referring here with these with very much to cow-calf enterprises. You know, what kind of, in our herd health programs, how do they affect these parameters? Are the pounds weaned or percent of calf crop weaned? These are very, very important. Can we influence calving distribution by some of the approaches? And I'd argue that we very much can and do influence these parameters with herd health programs. This is Animal Health 101. Certainly, we know that the reduction of diseases that affect health, we're dealing not with the bug, not just with the bug, its presence or absence, hardly ever does that make or break the situation, but we've got a complex interaction of the host, the agent, as well as the environment, and it's very, very complex. As we consider options, key point options for disease control or animal health programs, we certainly have options from top to bottom. And to consider what we can do, the resources, the tools, the knowledge that we have in the industry today, we've got more options than we ever have had in the past, and I think we can move forward with other thinking that will reduce our risk and enhance our profitability. Two words, biosecurity, biocontainment. We often reserve these for things like foreign animal diseases or things we don't have here, if you will. But very simply, both of these have great application for individual operations as well. Biosecurity is simply just the sum of actions to prevent disease entry into a herd or a unit of interest. And biosecurity, very closely, is what do we do to control a disease agent in an operation. That might be eliminated, eradicated, and very often it's controlled or managed to reduce or eliminate its effects. as we consider effects of infectious processes on populations of animals, let's discuss briefly the effects of vaccination, field exposure on the effects of disease. I think you well know that we have in any population of animals, and we can pick, we could make this kindergarten class if we wanted to, I suppose. There are animals that are resistant to a disease of interest, as well as animals that are susceptible. And with varying levels of immunity that might have been from vaccination, that might have been from field exposure to that particular agent. And in this mode of biosecurity and biocontainment, ideally, we'd like to keep our levels of challenge at very, very low, minimal levels, such that we have really no or low exposure, and its goals, no losses to the disease. I guess we might keep out of debate what those losses, how we might measure those losses. Is it economic? Is it lack of disease, lack of clinical disease? But basically, we want exposure very, very low, minimal to no measurable loss in an ideal situation. However, as often the case in this population of animals, if we superimpose a disease count level at a certain level, at an increased point, we then begin to have animals, more animals that are susceptible to disease, and fewer animals that are able to resist. In these kinds of situations is when we get herd breaks or herd or losses associated with that, whatever that infectious process might be. And we can make this disease challenge almost any disease agent we might choose, IDR, rhinovirus, VRSV, cat diarrhea, I think I'll use that example here as we move forward. But we can put any disease agent in there if we want, or even groups of disease agents, such as BRD agents, for example. To reduce the effects of that situation, then, we would often, in the industry, we often propose or intervene with vaccination on a usually preventive measure to increase or shift that herd level of immunity to the right, if you will, such that given a certain disease challenge level, we have more animals that are resistant to disease and fewer that are still susceptible to those effects. And in this schematic, that could be the effectiveness of those kinds of programs would be, of course, variable, this tail down here might be larger, might be smaller, given many, many complexities of the disease model. But we can ratchet this up again. And I think here again, I think as we begin the production systems, systems such as cattle right now, we often in our part of the world, we get very much into situations where this disease challenge starts to overwhelm any kind of immunity that we've been able to produce. And so we have, even in spite of our best efforts at improving immunity, we still have quite a few animals or many animals that are susceptible, and disease breaks ensue. And cat diarrhea, I think, is a great example of where this often occurs. And so as we start to expand our thinking into things like biosecurity, these principles really start to offer, I think, some real opportunity to address this kind of situation. So just a couple comments further on vaccination. We, in a population basis, vaccination needs to be able to reduce herd immunity and needs to also reduce the probability that animals that are not infected, that they do not become infected. In other words, to inhibit the spread of disease within that population. But we also know that we can certainly manipulate and change these levels of herd immunity by there's multiple examples, but just a few might be choices of vaccine, we might, the interval between vaccination and exposure, if we shorten that much prior to before an animal can respond to the vaccine, then induce, then bring in exposure, you may have insufficient protection. And also, we need animals vaccinated in the population. Also, in a model situation, paper by Cherry a few years ago, we certainly, and there are others as well, we know that disease agents spread or travel in populations of animals at greatly varying rates. And that means really that protection against certain disease agents must be variable, or higher for others, lower for others, depending on the rate of spread within a herd. So, for example, in Cherry's model, he suggested that herds that had PI cattle present in them needed to have higher levels of disease protection than those that did not, or baby virus being introduced into the herd, as an example. So I think that these population and herd concepts can become very, very important as we consider how we might immunize, how we might maintain this balance of resistance versus exposure. So I guess what are a few things that we've got in the toolbox here for biosecurity containment? Really, we're talking about preventing transmission in some form where it's pertinent, eliminating the agent potentially where that's pertinent, and also increasing immunity. So we've got some options. So I'd like to use a couple of examples of the new herd introductions discussion we're going to go through pretty briefly this next. And then we'll use BDV control as another example of how we can use biosecurity and biocontainment to our advantage in the beef industry. Got a few questions. These bulls look like they're a pretty big group of bulls, and genetically they're superior, nothing wrong with them, so I've got the option of buying one or all of them. And is there any downside to that? And that maybe a few people are deciding already they're the wrong color. But other than that, they look okay. Okay, now we got a little breed difference here, but not a lot. Let's also discuss, this is a cow that's got Young's disease. She's got chronic diarrhea, she's going to die. There's some possible link to the human Crohn's disease. And we also know that for every cow like that in a herd, there's a number of others that are also carriers. So I'll pose this question. If these bulls came from the herd, the same herd that cow comes in, came from, is there a downside to purchasing any of those bulls? Pose that question. Okay, here's a replacement, hopefully a replacement of quality heifer. Would I be granted any downside to purchasing this heifer or then if you just like her? Pretty good heifer. Well, as it turns out, she looks perfectly okay, but she's a PI BDD heifer. No symptoms, looks perfectly normal. So now would I still like to purchase her, bring her into my herd? If I do, I've assured myself 100% level that I'm introducing BDD into my herd. This is a PI BDD cat. This was a ranch that about 350 cows that purchased about 30 replacement heifers, and I'll give you the story in a little bit. But they had other PI calves born, but this is one of them. They also tested the dam here. The dam is negative, but the point being, they bought PI heifers, PI calves, so they 100% had 100% assurance of introducing BVD onto that ranch. That's not very good, but there's a little bit more to this story. That ranch that purchased those 30 replacement heifers calved those replacements separate from the herd. They then, as part of their biosecurity plan, tested those calves and then tested the dams of the positive calves. And those positives were culled. They were never introduced to the resident herd. They had an adequate vaccination program. There were no additional vaccinations that were required in that herd. So the bottom line here is that even though that ranch purchased PI animals that could have introduced DVD into the herd, it was not introduced into the herd because they calved those heifers separate, even though it was PIs resulted from that purchase, they were never introduced into the herd. And so they spent about $200 in tests, but potentially saved who knows how much money as a result of that particular plan. And I think this is an example, I believe, of things that the industry might really need to consider to prevent spread of just this disease, for example. Move a little slightly different direction here. You know, the practice of introducing cattle into herds during calving season, we know introduce a higher risk for calf diarrhea. Will that happen every year? No, but over a period of time, herds that introduce animals during calving season are at increased risk for calf scours. And we know that most cattle, there may not be a herd represented here that doesn't have at least one or two or three, or maybe more, calf diarrhea agents present already, regardless of whether the herd has a calf diarrhea problem. This includes grafting calves from any source, any outside source. So practices of keeping a few older cows or practices of doing that within herd would be just fine, but increasing risk results from bringing calves in from the outside. Another example here, we've got a great herd situation, but you know, I think asking ourselves what risk do we have of venereal diseases being introduced, how did that bull come into the herd, was he brought in as a virgin bull, was there any risk associated with that, was he a virgin bull or wasn't he, are these cows raised on the place and so forth, so what's the risk of that in this operation, what kind of biosecurity do they have to prevent entry of trick into the herd. So let's just zero in on some management considerations, and there may be wiggle room in some of these, but certainly let's, as we consider this issue of commingling, not commingling immediately with the resident herd is a great management practice for herd operations. How long? 3 or 4 weeks is probably sufficient. It allows some time for any tests that you might choose to do. Also, we know that animals that are transported certainly are immune suppressed and have other exposure risks. So if sickness occurs, it will occur in animals as they're isolated and not when they're out with the resident herd. And it also, if the illness occurs, there's a chance to get a diagnosis. Not commingling during calving season. We talked about calf diarrhea, but we could make a list of other agents and other health issues related to commingling, especially during calving season. So calving those new arrivals or new purchases separate is a really good practice. Vaccination can be used to reduce risk after that commingling period. And I guess we need to remember that this issue goes both ways, herds animals that are purchased as well as animals that are already in the place. So I guess we get into discussions about testing, and I'd suggest, you know, what diseases, what do we do titers for, et cetera, et cetera. I'd suggest that's probably very much an individual decision. What are your goals in your operation? If you're a seed stock producer, it'll be different than if you're a commercial producer. So we're not trying to make a laundry list here, but just as an example, and I think this is, I think we can justify this for all operations. Really, testing for PI status to avoid introducing PI animals into a herd is a key point, and that includes offspring of animals that are brought in as pregnant animals. You may want to make decisions about Yoni's disease, getting herd histories of animals, leukemia, and other agents of interest. You know, we're not even you notice we haven't added in any regulatory issues there, and we're assuming those are already on your list. Mentioned virgin bulls are really testing animals that are to reduce your risk for especially venereal diseases when introducing bulls. I think we often get hung up in cliches in the industry, well vaccinated, high health, or others. And as we think through these things, I believe that we need to just to ask ourselves, what do these cliches really mean at times, and are they really we're sourcing animals, say, from a high health source. Does that really meet the goals of does that really meet our goals for biosecurity if I'm purchasing animals from those kinds from operations such as that? So history is very important. Take home, certainly, it's almost that things like biosecurity of new herd introductions is not a very sexy thing, because we're looking for almost a non-event. We're looking for, the goal is business as usual. Prevention here is, we're hoping sort of an ultimate in prevention, and that we'll be business as usual. So I think that's a desired outcome, and really, as we consider moving forward, designing something like new herd introductions plans, setting your goals is very important for operations. Okay, let's move on or switch gears here in a little bit different focus, but nevertheless, another, I think, great application of biosecurity and biocontainment. And certainly with controlling DVD virus in the industry, we've got in the last 10 years or less, many more tools and knowledge that's associated with DVD virus that enables us to move forward. And that includes tests, improved vaccines, but probably more so is how we're applying control strategies to be more effective, to be and economical moving forward in the industry. Just as a brief review, we really, as we consider DVD virus infections, there are many effects, not going into those very deeply at all, but we're basically talking about acute DVD infections. There's a short incubation of about a week or less, and animals recover in a period of time, very similar to you and I with a common cold. And then also the other type of infection is a persistent infection that we'll define in the next slide, but I'd like to just highlight a couple points here. A characteristic of DVD virus infections is that the virus gets in the blood circulation, which gives opportunity for immune suppression and also fetal infections, one of which is the development of PI animals. These animals, when they're undergoing acute infections, often are not clinical. I can't identify an animal as being sick very much of the time, even though immune suppression and other effects are going on. However, I've emphasized that there are other infections related to acute DVD that kill acute animals. So the number here says 70 to 90%, but the downside of that other 10 to 30 can be pretty tough. So an outcome of a fetal infection at about a month and a half to 4 months gestation is this PI calf. And PI calves are born as a result of acute gestational exposure during that stage of gestation with a non-cytopathic form of the virus. But the point is that virus crosses that placental barrier to the fetus. There's no maternal or no cow immune protection whatsoever in that environment. So the fetus is dependent on its own ability to fend off an infection in that environment. environment. And in this case, the fetus recognizes BVD virus as part of itself and doesn't mount an immune response. And so that calf is born then PI. And if that, that calf down in the bottom right, our poster child or check calf, happens to be a heifer and gets back into the breeding herd, she will always give birth to a PI calf. And what proportions do those occur in? We believe that most PI calves out in the world are born as a result of acute gestational exposure rather than to PI calves. And that has quite a few ramifications of how we might approach DVD. And in many cases, it's important to remember that it's very much the young calves that are born this spring that are present in the herd going into next year's breeding season that are responsible to perpetuating that virus from one year to the next. We can very easily then have cow herds that have persistent DVD infections present from year to year, present in the calves, and never have a persistently infected cow or heifer that's a breeding herd. Just a short comment on economics. We never have enough in animal health. It seems to be very difficult to measure in many cases. But Bob Larson and Vern Pierce did a modeling study on the effects of introducing PI animals into herds that was published a couple of years ago in the Bovine Practitioner. And you can see the parameters that they used. The pregnancy rate, 5% decrease, is a research-derived number, and the others are modeled in based on some other data. But it's suggested that about $20 is a modeling number, $15 to $25 cost if PI animals are present and they're introduced into the herd. But I'd suggest that this is a modeling paper, and we well know that these losses can be less, but they can also be catastrophic. Very, very much higher. I had an individual show this slide not long ago in another state, and a guy in the front row shook his finger at me and said, "Your figures are way, way, way too low." And some of you may agree with that as well. So I guess keep this in mind that this is a modeling derived number. We know that and suspect that PI animals are the most common method of spreading virus between herds. And this goes back to our previous discussion on introducing animals. If I'm purchasing animals from a pool of animals where there's a percentage of PIs, it's a numbers game until I'm going to bring home a PI animal. And if I do nothing to stop that, I'm going to be introducing BVD into my herd. So I think we just remember it's very often a numbers game. Tools. We mentioned, what do we have in our toolbox in regard to BVD? There are a number of excellent tests, most relatively new, that are very, very good, and people generally agree that if the industry has the resolve, we could actually eradicate DVD from North America utilizing this array of tests that we have. Each has got its advantages and disadvantages, but we have excellent tests as resources, as tools. How we apply these tests is also very, very important. And I'd suggest that establishing goals of what are we trying to accomplish as we move into DVD control very much drives if, when, or how we might do tests that are related to testing and calling PIs. You know, are we monitoring the herd to determine yes or no? Do I have is it a problem? Is it an issue? Is it present? Is it the biosecurity? Am I doing it to prevent entry of BVD into my herd? Is it purchased animals? Biocontainment. Is it, I've got a problem here in my herd and I'm going to use a herd approach to eliminate BVD? And so I think those are probably the three main categories of why we might test related to PI animals. Okay, another tool in the box, vaccines. I think as we consider what or why we might use BVD vaccines in cow operations and replacement heifers, the highest goal, the highest target really is prevention of PI calves. Yes, BVD will result in congenital defects and abortions and a number of other conditions, but if we're preventing PI calves, that's our primary target. The incidence and risk of the others decreases with time if we're addressing the PI issue. Vaccine studies have been conducted in around the world, and almost all of them show quite marked effectiveness against control animals, but there's also quite a bit of variability of studies around the world. So it behooves us to, I think, study those reports. But I think as we also consider our tools and developing these concepts of how we might address DVD in our own herds in the U.S., individuals as well as the industry, there's probably some, there are concepts that are, I think, developed and in some ways are still in the mode of being developed regarding DVD. But certainly, as we consider what some components of a control plan might be, the issue of preventing entry into herds, biosecurity is key. Preventing, if exposure occurs, preventing PI calves, and then especially infected herds, the issue of herd approaches, we'll touch on that briefly, as well as checking ourselves with some type of monitoring surveillance program to detect or confirm success. As we consider just a little bit to develop this thinking a little further, in general, there's a couple of numbers that are available in the U.S. This was published by Tom Whittem a few years ago. We believe that, and in that study, about 3 to 4% of the herds had PI calves at branding time. And so that starts to, it reminds us that I believe that a minority of herds actually contain PI calves, and the number I keep in my hip pocket is probably less than 10% of herds have PIs in them. So that means, you know, there are herds that can really benefit from moving out of the PIs, but boy, everybody can essentially benefit by decreasing risk of introduction, which is the route that the new herds are really infected. So a number, I think, to keep in mind. What's the biosecurity plan look like for BVD? We talked about herd additions already, a key point, and that's no doubt the most common route to introduce BVD virus into herds. Beyond that, we get into this topic or what we call preventing infected contacts. That's going to be variable from herd to herd. A biosecurity plan, there probably isn't one out there for any disease that's 100%. And so we're in a mode of continual improvement and continual development. We're into these concepts. But certainly, if I've got a feedlot on my place, I've got a cow herd, I'm going to be concerned about contacts between a feedlot where I buy animals, bring them in, as well as contact in my operation. I guess, for example, I might not be very interested in keeping my bull battery in the feedlot, for example, where exposure can occur into a bull battery, transfer back into the cow herd. So things like that, cattle flow can be very, very important. And certainly fence lines, trailer use are other issues, sanitation, certainly there are risks for entry that need to be addressed. Let's take a look briefly here at what does a herd level approach look like in regard to eliminating PI animals. So this is where the herd test strategies often come in. I might make a comment here before we move on that these fundamental components, I believe everyone in the industry fairly well agrees with them. I can argue that vaccination ought to be part of a biosecurity or biocontainment plan. But I think the differences that you might hear in people that talk about DVD control or write about it may be the ways or the level of entry into a control plan. Some would suggest a herd level testing approaches initially. Others might suggest biosecurity. Let's not introduce it as being primary as the place to start. But I think most people are generally embracing these fundamentals, be it in somewhat different order many times. So I think those are some things that you have to make decisions on as well. So what's a herd level approach look like? I get caught describing these as herd tests. In reality, these are not a test of every animal in the herd, because cows essentially are not tested. So a herd approach is a pre-breeding test of calves and basically anything on the place that's not nursing a calf. That would be replacements, cows that lost their calves, bulls, etc. The steer that got through the chute that's still out there. Of course, they're negative, then they're fine. Positive animals then go to slaughter. Calves that are positive probably run to remove those pairs, because the target then becomes that we need to go back and test the dams of positive calves. Removing those positive animals, our poster child calf a little bit ago when we left the ranch, taking the pictures, that calf was going into the corral with horses where there wasn't going to be any contact with cattle on that operation, and they were talking about veal. There's no public health significance, no human health risks associated with PIs. So, of course, positive dams then would be sold to slaughter, but the negatives can stay in the herd or done whatever you might choose. So that would be a quick run-through of our herd level approach to a biocontainment plan for BVD. We're in this mode in the industry where there's certainly been a lot more testing, where people are finding PIs, and so this issue of what do we do with them becomes important. We know that PIs are defective, and we also know that my marketing, my PI animals to you, has an indefinite moral ethical downside, and could translate to legal too. So the Academy of Veterinary Consultants, Standards of Practice Committee, as well as the bovine practitioners, have written and approved statements relating to these moral, ethical, and possibly legal obligations, and strongly oppose marketing of any of these animals where they might come in contact and expose others, and without full disclosure of the status of these animals. So I think this is a time for the industry to step up and own up to responsibly handling these kinds of animals. And I think a point, though, is that the point of our discussion is that we're preventing these PI animals. We're not, we want to get in the mode where statements like this are not an issue. And so if we achieve some goals within the industry, the needs for that kind of statement really decrease. So I would certainly urge you to visit, to think on your own, to visit with your veterinarian, and to really, really think about goals that you might have related to DVD control. Is my goal to keep it out of my herd? Is my goal, I want to prove it. I don't think I have it's present in my herd, but I want to do a herd test anyway. It may be a goal. I want to eliminate it from my herd. I've had a problem. I've had mucosal disease, etc. I need to eliminate it. Or I don't want to market PI animals to my customers, whether that be commercial cattle or whether that might be through a seed stock operation. So herd goals, I believe, are very, very key to what components that you embrace, how far you choose to go in regard to VVD control plans. take-home message here, I think control plan, including goals, is key. Remember fundamentals here. Let's, I think, getting tunnel vision on equating DVD control is to DVD testing is a mistake. Equating DVD control to vaccinating only is a mistake. And I think we need to integrate the tools that we have into plans to be more comprehensive if we have goals that are trying to achieve higher levels of control. And I believe that also we're certainly in a mode of we're updating in our concepts and approaches. I think it is open. Will there be value attached to these animals down the road? Really to have no data to support or refute. It's not been looked at, maybe a little bit in the offing, but certainly I think our thinking is advancing in this particular area, and we can achieve greater things than we have in the past. So with that, I'm looking forward to, I don't know how I'm doing on time here, Dee, but I'm looking forward to Dr. Griffin's presentation and answering your questions. So I'll try to get unhooked here.